Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And if you hear coughing, just ignore it.
Just ignore it. It's ignore only a
it.
Test.
It's a little, just a little free lung slime I do for you every year in the winter. Yeah. Story of my life. Okay, so I do have free advertisement of the week.
Oh.
I forgot last week. Actually, well, I wasn't here last week.
Well, yeah.
Week before.
You
How
forgot,
about
you forgot the whole week
I forgot
last
the whole week,
week
last yeah. week. There was something going on. Yeah, so I happened across Bright's Engraving and Trophy. They are a veteran-owned business at 930 Merchant Street in Redding, California. So kind of over sandwiched between, like, they're right around the corner from Biggin's Lighting, actually.
Yeah.
They're lovely, too. But Bright's Engraving and Trophy, they made a whole bunch of name tags for us. The magnetic deals, anyway.
Very nice.
Super fast. We called to ask them if we could drop off a check to have them made, and they were like, oh, are you going to come over today? I said, yeah, I'm on my way. Get there. They're like, oh, we just made them for you, so you don't have to come back. Like, thank you.
Yeah.
That was cool. So let's see. You can find them at 530-223-3558, but it's Bright's Engraving and Trophy on Merchant Street.
So, what's her address?
930 Merchant Street. So if you need, like, you know, I don't know. We needed name tags, but they do all sorts of stuff. Hats and shirts, and they do specialized stuff, one-offs. It's a husband and wife business, and they're super, super nice, and they do a really nice job. So there you have it.
There you go.
Oh, and the price was good. So what's not to like?
Always important.
What is not to like? All right. So you can always find our archives at wethepeopleradio.us. Should really kind of stress that, because I would like you to share this program swiftly, because we're running out of time. Today is October 26th, so it's likely we won't have a chance to re-air this unless we play an I Told You So episode. Maybe we, maybe we can add it to the I Told You So
Let's
tour.
Hope we don't have to do that.
Prop 50, terrible idea. Boo. Vote no. We're going to give you all the reasons why. So we did another program with Mark on this a couple of weeks ago. Our guest, Mark Moisher, is an attorney with the Dillon Law Group. That's Harmeet Dillon, for those of you who follow conservative legal folks. And he has been there since 2017. He's a passionate advocate for justice, renowned for his ability to challenge powerful adversaries and uphold the rights of the underrepresented. That's what we're talking about today. I got representative on the brain. And then there's the slime. Slime always just shoots me down. So, he's in San Francisco on Post Street practicing there. I've got all his information on the program today. And I also have the other show posted on there along with the current maps. So we're going to talk about these congressional maps in the state of California again. And if you have not seen them, I really would encourage you to go look. So you can find them at wethepeopleradio.us. Click the tab for today and go on there, because honestly, they're just crazy. Some of them, I have the before and after, actually. And so to the naked eye, you'll look and think, well, I don't know, it's not really that different. But if you look at the one for the northern part of the state, the rural part of the state, up here, it's the green section. And so the good news is whoever drew these, the before and after green section is the one that really is stunning. Goes all the way from the top northeast corner of California down to, I don't know, Sausalito.
Yeah, clear down past Bay Area.
It's ridiculous. And at some points, I think it's like 3 miles across. It's just, it's.
And I'm thinking the people down in the Bay Area are very, very aware of all our issues in Northern California.
Yeah, right?
They stay right on top of them.
So I'm going to have Mark explain what a D plus 25 district turning into a, or a R plus 25 district turning into a D plus 25 district means, because that is a 50-point swing. And I don't know if it's the, Mark, is this the district that has the most change, or are there others that are equally insane that we just don't know about?
I think that is probably the most stark example, but it is not the only example. I mean, we got the way how these maps have been drawn is they have made sure that San Francisco Bay Area politics predominates around the state. Yes, you have the San Francisco controlling who represents MODOC. We have them who represents Placer County. We have them reaching into the Stockton area. We even have them reaching down into the Fresno area. And there is another one that goes clear down to San Luis Obispo. The way how they drew these new maps is it's like it's a spider where they have just tried to ensure that every nook and corner for anything north of the Grapevine is to be affected by the Bay Area. And that Bay Area politics must represent everything north of the Grapevine.
Well, and what a great deal, because that's where you have a huge population base, so you can just carve out a big chunk of liberals for you and a big chunk of liberals. I'm seeing that Oprah meme, you know, with her arms way up in the air. Some liberals for you and some liberals for you. It's like really kind of and that is not obviously representation, but do the explain to people what the plus and the minus kind of ranking, I guess, on the districts means, just so people can get some politics talk under their belt.
Oh, pure politics. Well, what we as politicians love to do is we love to take easy things and make it very complicated. And, you know, because in the state of California, we don't have Republicans and Democrats. We have Republican, Democrats, and Independents. But you have to try to guess or figure out how the Republicans plus independents and the Democrats plus independents, and try to put a number that, because we have the top two, and in the November election, there are only going to be two people there. There's not somebody for, you know, there's not a third or fourth or fifth party. So you're going to figure out there's a what we call as 100 points on the scale. And so in the current Congressional District 51, the political pundits have said that based upon the Republicans and the independents, they will outvote the Democrats and the independents by 25 points. Or, you know, it will be like a 62.5 to 38.5. It's a 25-point spread in favor of the Republicans. Now how they have gerrymandered these maps, slicing and dicing Northern California up, the ranchers and the farmers of Northern California, and put them into half into Congressional District 1 and half into Congressional District 2, and made both of those districts run down into the Bay Area, so the Bay Area has the predominant voters in each of those districts. It now means that when you take all the Democrats and independents, that they're supposed to get 62.5% of the vote instead of the Republicans getting 62.5% of the vote. So basically, in pure politics, what they have done is they have taken all the conservative common sense voters of, you know, north of Sacramento, east of the coastal mountains, and they have divided them in half and made sure that population is now represented by the Bay Area.
That seems totally fair.
Well, whether it's fair or not, and, you know, the thing is, so many people are, oh, this is a travesty to the Republican Party and all that kind of stuff, but what we actually have to first step back to is that this is an unconstitutional power grab.
Absolutely.
This should be happening. You know, forget the pure politics of the situation. You know, yes, it is, I will be the first to agree. I'm a diehard Republican. I ran statewide in 2018 as a Republican candidate for Secretary of State, and I ran in 2022 as a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. So I am a diehard Republican, but I'm also a constitutional attorney. And as a constitutional attorney, I like to go back and look at what they're actually doing and go, is this even legal? Is it even constitutional? And we don't even have to get to the question about how bad this is for Republicans, because it doesn't matter how good or how bad it is if you're violating the law to even do it to begin with.
Yeah, if they get away with this, I mean, what's the next step? I mean, they can pretty much make their own rules on anything. And that's really what they're doing, is they're making their own rules on this outside of the Constitution.
Well, I do not believe that they're going to get away with this. You know, if this passes, if Prop 50 passes, I am preparing right now a lawsuit that we are going to be filing if Prop 50 passes, because what Gavin Newsom has done is he has taken congressional districts that had zero legal challenges. Nobody went to court to say these districts are unconstitutional. So he took legal districts that were properly drawn by a volunteer, independent redistricting commission, and in his desire to put politics at the forefront of our representation, where politicians pick the voters, he had to violate the California Constitution 5 times. But the result of the map that he drew violates, in my opinion, the U.S. Constitution. So he took legal maps, unconstitutionally drew them, and the result thereby is maps that violate the U.S. Constitution. So it's going to be, not only does this cost the taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars to run the election, to run a poll, but in addition to that, it's going to cost the taxpayers, probably millions of dollars in legal fees to defend these maps that, in my opinion, are just, and experts that I'm talking to, are just undefensible.
Yeah. How do you explain, maybe for the folks who missed, the last go-round we had, they explain it by saying that, they had to, got to fight back on Save Democracy. So if you were a yoga master, how would you pretzel yourself to explain that this saves democracy?
Well, yeah. Number one, we're not a democracy.
I know, doesn't that just piss you off?
To say that this is that Donald Trump was trying to destroy democracy, if we're not a democracy, how can you destroy something that we do not already have?
Yeah.
That's beyond, We go into Texas and we're going to have plenty of time to do so, but one of the things that's been the most eye-opening about this process is if you went back to June of this year and you went and polled Democrat voters in the state of California, they would have overwhelmingly told you that they support the commission. It is a huge number. But Gavin Newsom and Nancy Pelosi have never liked the commission because it took power away from the politicians and it did not allow them and special interests to control who represented the people. So they have never liked this. They were, Nancy Pelosi and the congressional Democrats were some of the first and biggest supporters to try to make sure that the commission never happened to begin with. And now they're some of the biggest funders to make sure that this one-time-only exception is going to pass. And I don't know if you remember, but, this whole concept, what was it, about 12, 16 years ago, continuing resolution, it was like, oh, this is a one-time thing, so we're going to do a continuing resolution while we try to figure out the budget. And now what happens is about every, 4 months, we have another continuing resolution. So the first time a anybody who believe the concept that this is a one-time-only thing, they're smoking a lot of Kool-Aid, and anybody who believes it, really, I hate to say this, you even belong in a ballot box if you can, if politicians can pull the wool over eyes that easily?
Yeah, because if they can draw a district where they are basically guaranteed to win just based on numbers, I mean, the thing is, you wouldn't go to a casino that was stacked like this. You know, you wouldn't bet on horses that were, you know, let's get 9 lame horses and 1 really good horse, and let's see if we can trick people into betting on the lame ones. Like, it just isn't even.
Yeah, but unfortunately, they will bet on the lame one because they believe all the propaganda that is supporting their case.
Yeah, well, they've crippled all the other horses in the race. Everybody's like, well, they can run. Well, then you get into the mechanics of running, and how can you raise money to run in a district that's basically unwinnable?
Right.
I mean, people, after a while, they go, hey, look, you know, the die is cast. You can't get there from here. We have to take a really quick break already, which is kind of odd. This will be time traveling day. Whenever we're on with you, Mark, it goes really, really fast. So the only thing I could think of that was actually the good that came out of the Bay Area was probably Journey. They had some good music. They actually played at the high school across town the year I graduated. That's how old I am. But Journey wasn't famous enough to actually be amazing. They actually got them for their graduation, which made my high school suck even more. We'll be right back with our guest, Mark Moisher. We are talking about Prop 50 and election politics and all that good stuff at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Yes, it does keep turning towards November 4th. If you do not have a ballot, get with the program. Get down to your... Mark, if somebody doesn't have a ballot, before we, like, forget about this part of it, the mechanics of the actual making sure that you're weighing in, unless you're going to vote yes, of course, in which case, you know, isn't this the part where we tell them the election's on the 5th? So if you don't have a ballot, get down to your clerk's office. Should they register online if they haven't registered to vote, or should they go to the clerk? What's your...
It's too late to register to vote, you'd have to register to vote on election day.
Okay. So because you can do same-day registration, so how does that actually work?
Well, what it is, you would go in, and they would put it in, it's called a conditional ballot, and what they do is they make sure that you have not voted anywhere else, and they will then, it will kind of register you to vote and vote, but it's supposed to be the last ballot that's counted so that they can make sure that you didn't vote anywhere else in the state.
Okay. So they can walk into a polling, do they have to go into their polling place, or it can be a polling place?
Each county is slightly different in the rules, but you should just, you know, some counties have vote centers, some is, you know, precincts, so you should be going into the one where you're eligible to vote. So if you're in a county that has a vote center, then any vote center works. But if you're, you know, you can go into the register of voters at any time, or you would have to go into your precinct.
Okay. So they can probably find all this online. As well, as far as where to go and what to do.
But there's probably the most important thing that we actually really talk about, because we got people who are in Northern California, not just in the Redding area, listening to us. during the Biden administration, they changed how the post office postmarked your mail. And as a result, your local post office no longer postmarked your ballot. Instead, your ballot goes to a regional center, which will then postmark it when they postmark it. And I was involved with an election in 2024 in Utah where people were voting their ballot on election day by mail, and that mail had to go all the way into Las Vegas, and Las Vegas took 2 to 3 days before they postmarked it and then sent it back into St. George, Utah. And by the time it got back, the person had mailed it on election day, but because regional centers can take 2 to 3 days to actually put a postmark it on, all of a sudden, those ballots did not count. And so for everybody up in Northern California, your regional center is down in San Francisco, which means that your mail is not going to be postmarked until it gets down to San Francisco, which could be a day or two. And the fact that, you know, we got government shutdowns and all that kind of stuff, I wouldn't be messing with mail after this Friday. That's probably, you know, I would actually probably say after Thursday of this week, if you haven't mailed it in by Thursday, do not mail your ballot back. You could drop it off in a at a polling center, or at your county election office, or a ballot box if your county has one. But do not, I would say, after Thursday of this week, do not trust the mail in mailing your ballot back.
Okay,
that's super important information. Yeah, absolutely.
So, who typically returns early, and has that changed?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Like, which party typically, votes early? And we're not going to get into who votes often, but how about votes early? And has that changed at all?
If we went back to 2016 and prior, Republicans tended to get their ballots in early. The Republicans used to build up a really sizable lead on early ballots. And that the Democrats couldn't quite catch up on election day with. And Republicans statewide often won races, or, you know, we used to have a whole lot more congressmen than we did. But in 2018, there was a real shift in the thinking and the operations of the Democrat side. And they actually started putting a lot more resources into making sure that their base turn their ballots in early. And there's also been kind of this psychological warfare going in among Republicans with this concept that, you know, the post office is destroying your ballot, or, you know, who knows. I've heard way too many theories. It's like, you can't trust the post office. You can't trust these mail-in ballots. There's all these theories that go on, and I actually kind of think that they were kind of started by the left to try to turn down the number of Republicans who vote early, because what they do is they build up these very sizable margins, and then they go out and say, well, based upon turnout, the election's already over, and then that means that the Republicans who are waiting to the last minute to vote, now all of a sudden they say, well, why go vote anyways, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, you know, prior to, you know, 2016 and prior, Republicans actually did a better job, but the narrative since about 2018 has changed. The operations of the Democrats have changed, and the media has played into it. And I'll be honest, the biggest suckers on this have kind of been the Republicans, because we have bought in on this that, oh, we can't vote early, that they're cheating. And so I'm only going to vote on election day because that, I'm going to make sure that, you know, because I see it go into the machine, I guarantee that I have voted and all that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And then because the narrative becomes, oh, you've already lost, you've already lost, you've already lost, Now all of a sudden when, you know, your kid is sick and you had to not go to work that day, you know, okay, well, my vote doesn't matter. I just won't go. And,
yeah.
You know, the perfect voter like you and me, we've already made a plan. We're going to vote no matter what, okay? The first time I ever voted, I was in Russia and I voted in the Russian consulate type thing. You know, we're not going to miss a election. But the problem is the vast majority of voters are not Aaron or Mark, are they?
They're more like Bill.
What does that mean? I am not
getting in the middle of that one. Man. I am not getting in the middle
Throw
of that
me
one.
Under the bus.
I vote for Bill all the time. Oh,
yeah,
wait.
I just say that I'm out the loud. One that I'm the one that nails them and gets them in there.
So the problem is the vast majority of voters, you know, they are more likely to know who the stars are on their favorite sitcom than they are to know who their congressman is. They are more likely to know the players on the Golden State Warriors than they are to know the members of their city council.
Down with Jim Comey and the Swifties.
So, you know, the reality of the situation is there are those of us who are going to vote no matter what. And we're going to be the most vocal on talking about elections and talking about no on Prop 50. But the thing is, the vast majority of the people around us are not that way. And I could just think of my own family. You know, my own family, my cousins, you know, grandparents, uncles, aunts, you know, nieces, nephews. I'm the only one in that entire realm of, you know, between both sides of the family, you know, probably a good 75 people. I'm the only one who is as involved in politics as, you know, at any big degree. And so the thing is, what we have to understand is that it is important that we get our votes in, that we make a plan to vote, and that we vote. That those people up in Northern California who are listening to my voice right now, because of the changes that the post office made in order to try to not become bankrupt, they had to cut the cost of, you know, postmarking mail at the local post offices, and as a result thereby, you can no longer trust that your vote is going to count if you mail it, I would say, Friday of this week.
Yeah. Right. And so for those people, there's another thing that's been sort of a deal. There's a hole that's like a paper punch through the whole envelope. And so people get all worked up about how they're spying on your vote so they can throw your ballot away and stuff like that. But I know that one time there were a couple of counties in California that the hole lined up with, can't remember, like a yes vote or a no vote. And you could basically see how somebody voted. But for the whole point of having the hole is just to see if there's a ballot inside the envelope, right?
Yeah, or if some counties put the holes in such a place that you can, so that visually impaired voters know where to find. So it's kind of a dual purpose hole. But it's there. It's great government incompetence. Because there's like 8 different ways that you could put your ballot in.
The thing is
that we only have one thing on the ballot. So the government could have very quickly gone, don't see it this way, let's flip it over. Don't see it this way, now let's flip it over. Don't see it this way, now flip it over. Don't see it this way, now let's turn it inside out. Don't see it this way, don't see it this way. Okay, great, we got a great placement of where the hole is. I mean, there was only one thing on the ballot.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know,
yeah.
When you have a ballot with 40 different things and multiple different options, the reason for that hole, you know, where it's at and all that kind of stuff, it's almost impossible not to show a vote. Now, not every county does that. I live in Orange County. It does not have a hole in my ballot.
Really?
So,
in your envelope?
Yeah. my envelope does not have a hole.
So they have to look in all of them
to see if there's a
ballot to make sure there's nothing in it.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. I didn't know if that was a rule or not. Well, and then, I mean, honestly, we didn't. You had to apply to be an absentee voter for like my entire life until COVID hit, and then suddenly it was like
everybody,
you know,
an absentee.
We just shot ballots out of a cannon.
It was 2018. They passed it
was
in 2017. 2018 was the first election. And because of the success that California had with it, when COVID hit, the Democrat operation said, this is such a great idea, and they flooded it upon every single, or as many states as possible. And if you actually look at it, that is the reason why there were so many more votes cast for president in 2020 than we had had before, or, you know, in this last election, 2024, is because under COVID, for one-time basis, so many states went out and did this universal mail-in ballot, which allowed a lot more. Yes, it was easier to vote, but there's a lot of integrity issues that go with it when you have, you know, 75 ballots showing up at a building that's no longer occupied. Whatever happened to those ballots type stuff? So, when you do not properly maintain your voter roll, and now you start mailing ballots out to everyone, there are problems. And, you know, I am involved in litigation over that particular issue, and we'll probably be involved in that, you know, issue for years to come. But the thing is, what the voters of the state of California need to do is we need to swamp the vote. We need to stop making excuses about why our vote doesn't matter and get it in.
Yeah.
You know how long it's going to take you to vote one thing, stick it in the envelope, and put it in the mail tomorrow morning? It's going to take you longer to walk to your mailbox to put it in than it's going to take you to fill out that ballot.
Yeah. And
there's no stamp required. There is zero cost to you right now. If that ballot is sitting on your living room table, are you really going to drive to the poll on election day just to fill in one question? I mean, that you may like how that feels of going in and voting on the poll at the election day and getting to put your sticker on and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, my dad taught me the thing called time value of money. Is that really the best use of your time to, you know, get in the car, drive down to the polling center, walk in, vote one issue, and then walk back out and then drive to wherever your next meeting is? That's not a great time value of your money. And if you're waiting to tell election day to do that, you don't really respect your time very much.
Well, and bottom line is one wrong move, you know, wrong move.
One thing comes up and
something happens, you get called out of town. I had that once. I missed I think it was a presidential primary, and like in my 20s, and I thought, okay, that's it. I'm out. Like, I'm going to vote absentee. And so I always did. We didn't have drop boxes for a long time. I'm kind of a fan of the box at the clerk's office or taking it to the clerk. But if I lived far away. The other thing, too, we have to take a really quick break. When we come back, we have to talk about ballot harvesting. Because ballot harvesting became like a dirty word. But ballot harvesting means you can go knock on your neighbor's door, get their ballot, and take it in. And we'll talk the finer points when we return with our guest, Mark Moisher. So you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
imperfections. I got my slide rule from school. You add it up, and it don't add up. And shed some light on it too. And I'm just inches close to the finish. Cross it and bid you adieu. I calculated every combination, every misdirection, every subtle deception. Kickstart my thinking, I was lost in space, staring at a spot on the moon. Negotiating the anticipation of reentering the atmosphere too soon.
So for those of you that thought that might be too obscure, the song is called Done the Math by a group called the Headstones. Lead singer on that one actually played the sheriff in Yellowstone, little known fact. But I swear to God, that's what people are hearing when they decide they're not going to vote.
Yeah.
You know, calculating reentering the atmosphere too soon. And just fill out the ballot and take it in.
Yeah.
Or give it to your neighbor.
You hear that so much. You talk to somebody about an issue,
I don't vote
because it doesn't count. But then when you press them on the issue, they don't know anything about it. They are totally unplugged.
Or it just feels like it's like a protest. You know, the voter rolls, the machines, the this, the that. But ballot harvesting, all that means is you can turn in someone else's ballot for them. Like, I mean, I realize a lot of people did dirty stuff with ballot harvesting, but it's actually legal. So Mark, you know, you go to your next door neighbor who, you know, doesn't get out much and, hey, I'm going down to the clerk's office. Want me to take your ballot in? That's all totally legal now, right? You can't fill it out for them, but.
Yeah, there's a church down in Southern California that is one of those mega churches, and they have, you know, they kind of sit on the border of three counties. And so they have a ballot box for, you know, Orange County, one for L.A. County, one for Riverside, one for San Bernardino County. They're kind of right there in those four county areas. And they actually turn in, I think I heard something like 40,000 ballots an election cycle, just by setting up a table every week. And, you know, the pastor there, you know, says, hey, bring your ballot in. We'll pray over your ballot. And then, you know, and after the service, you just go back there and you drop it in. You know, maybe your mother or father or your grandmother or grandfather are, you know, not as spry as they used to be. And you're going to be able to pick up their, you know, they can vote. You pick up their envelope. And you could drop it in the mailbox, or you're going to be driving right by the registered voters, and you can drop it off for them, and you can make sure that their voice is heard.
Yeah, and there's nothing shady or weird about that, but, you know, if you are doing that to help people, just make sure they sign their envelope and put their phone number and that kind of thing.
If you go by and pick it up, don't you have to sign the envelope as the person that turned it in?
Yes.
I think so.
There's a spot on there for that.
Yeah, so if you're not the one turning in a ballot.
But it isn't like before where you had to be, I don't know, didn't you have to have shared DNA or something? There was like, it was kind of tricky to turn in someone else's ballot before in the olden days.
Yeah, that's the rules of 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could sit here and we could talk for the next 5 hours. Actually, you and I could probably talk for about the next 25 hours. About everything that we don't like that Gavin Newsom has done over the last 7 years to reduce the integrity of our election.
Good old Mussolini.
But here's the deal. We got to fight. We got to play this game based upon the rule books that are in effect for this game.
Yes.
And we cannot go back to the year 1886. And say, back in the day, you know, we used to have only Facebook ballots. Well, unfortunately, no matter how much you or I like that fact, our representatives, we live in a republic, our representatives have made decisions that for our election, you know, in California, there are going to be multiple forms of ballots. And the only way that we are going to change that is if we change our representative. And the only way we change our representative is if we educate the voters who normally do not vote, and we get them stirred up about the issues, and we get them to go vote. You know, as of a couple of days ago, only 14% of Republicans had already voted. So that number's probably gone up a couple points, but let's just say it's gone up 6 points and we're at 20%. That means 4 out of every 5 Republican voters in the state of California have not yet even gone in to vote. That is what I call a target-rich environment.
Yeah.
Aaron. You know, that means that you can pick up the phone and you can start calling all your Republican friends, all your common sense friends, and you got an 80% chance, 80% chance that they have not yet voted yet.
Wow.
That is, you know, if you were to go tell, you know, Steph Curry at the Golden State Warriors, you know, if you shoot 80% of the time, you're going to make a basket. He's going to be sitting there shooting as fast as he possibly could, right?
I was going to say, no one else ever touches the ball.
Yeah. So it's a target-rich environment over the next 9 days here, and it's critical that we get our voters out. And that's, you know, the statistics show that there are enough common sense voters in the state of California that if we simply vote, we will defeat Prop 50 and this power grab will go away.
Well, the other thing is all those late text messages that you're going to get from the yes on or no on 50 campaign, you know, all the campaigns. I mean, if they're paying attention and running a quality campaign, they know who's already voted because they don't know how they voted. But, like, when I dropped my my ballot off the other day, I don't know, maybe 3 days later, I get a text message that says, we've received your ballot from the Registrar of Voters office. So I get confirmation that they've received my ballot. Well, anybody who's pulling lists and sending out reminders to people, you have to pay for that. So you don't want to send reminders to people who've already voted. So you're getting a current list of whose ballot is still, quote, live and available to be voted. If you want to get off the – if you're angry about, you know, getting the phone calls and the text messages, vote.
Yeah, that stops it.
Like your vote, your ballot now is out of play. And the phone calls stop, the text messages stop, and it certainly saves all those campaigns. I mean, if you're a no on Prop 50 person, you're waiting until the last minute, you're actually using resources that could be better utilized elsewhere.
Very true. And here's the thing that people just don't understand. In 2022, I was your Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. There were more than enough Republican voters in the state of California. Had they simply voted, that I would be talking to you right now as a United States Senator, had they actually voted.
We wouldn't have Gavin Newsom as a governor if they actually voted.
Yeah, that's a great example. I mean, we worked hard to get the recall
qualified.
On the ballot, qualified, and then, what was it, 20% or 25%
of the Republicans? A zillion people, you know, a zillion Republicans didn't vote, so let's just say the majority of them would have voted to recall, he'd be gone.
Yeah, we wouldn't be sitting
there. I have spoken to those people. So for everybody who's out there, I can hear you. I can hear you in my mind. Yeah, they cheated. They just cheated. No, I've talked to dozens and dozens and dozens of these people. And God bless them. They mean well. But they're like, yeah, I hate Gavin Newsom. Great. Did you ever sign that recall? Yeah, I did. You know, like the second one, the good one? Yeah, I signed it. Did you vote when it was on the ballot? Oh, no, it doesn't matter. They were going to cheat.
That drives me nuts.
So it does matter. It does count. It does make a difference. And, you know, for the folks who are like, well, we should have paper ballots. Well, we should have same-day voting. All those things. I'm like, don't disagree with any of those things. But how about we vote while we're fixing it? Like,
I mean, the thing is, I have a team of attorneys up and down the state that we are monitoring the results. Okay?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I did read a thing about that the other day. Do tell.
We got attorneys, but here's the deal. I can only litigate what is actually there.
Oh,
if somebody
true.
Doesn't owe, I can't litigate it.
That's true.
You know, it's just there's no...
You can't litigate all the people who didn't bother to vote because they felt, quote, disenfranchised. It's like,
yeah,
be disenfranchised while you cast your ballot. How about that?
You know, I can, you know, if somebody casts a ballot and they, and something happens to it, there's some, you know, they know that they voted, but now the system says they didn't vote, I can litigate that. I can't litigate the person who doesn't vote. I can litigate if somebody turned in the ballot late. I can litigate if the post office decides to wait a week to slap a postmark on something. I would rather not. That's why I took the time to tell your people, hey, if you live up in Northern California and you're going to vote by mail, you better get it in by this Thursday. Period. End of the story. Okay?
Well, there are people who...
stuff if people vote.
Yeah. And there are people who listen all over the place, and there are folks that will listen to this on the archive. So, you know, listening live, probably most of them live up here in Northern California. But if you live in Ohio, this all still applies. The finer points may be different as far as, you know, whether you're a precinct or a polling place or, you know, that kind of stuff. But the idea still stands. You have to vote. And I do think that that is kind of what happened in 2024. I think all those people who kind of sat out at some point between 2020 and 2024 because they were just mad that everything was not right and they'd seen so many voter fraud, you know, videos and mail trucks with ballots in them and, you know, all that kind of jazz. And they became really just kind of angry about the whole thing. I think they decided, all right, I'm going to throw it in one more time. And look what happened. Much to the chagrin of our pals on the left.
Can I give, you know, do we got a couple minutes here or should I wait for the
Yeah, no, we're good. We have slightly under 3 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to tease something for the top of the hour. How does that sound?
Okay.
There is something that happened with the election of congressmen who are elected in a year ending in 6 that has to do with the census. There are 2 deadlines for the census that are reports done to Congress. And I am going to take the time to break all that down when we come back. And in my opinion, it's one of the reasons why Nancy Pelosi and Gavin Newsom have gone all in on this scheme, this unconstitutional power-grabbing scheme, and it actually has to do with the census question.
Ah.
And so that is something that people, they're, you know, I'm not usually the person who goes and puts on a tinfoil hat.
No, but I like it. I've got a song.
But there's actually a real legitimate something that Congress has to do. The Congress, and it only applies to the Congress that's elected in a thing. And it also has to do with what's going on with the Supreme Court in the case of Louisiana versus Calais, where the affirmative action for politicians, the Supreme Court may be ending that. So when you start putting all this together, there is actually a strategic reason why the Democrats are going all in right now on this unprecedented power grab where the legislature just needs to go find, where the Democrats need to go find 5 more votes this year. Why can't they wait till 2028? You know, what's really going to happen? Why do they feel like they need it this year? And so that's going to be something that we'll talk about at the top of the hour. How's that?
All right. That's amazing. And I have the perfect song to go out to tantalize them. You're listening to We the People. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I don't want to wait anymore. I just don't think I
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Today is October 26, 2025. And our guest is Mark Moisher. He is an election law attorney, a constitutional attorney. So we're talking about Prop 50, and we are discussing election laws. And I thought, Mark, you deserved some good, like, lead-in music to your theory. You said, we're not going to require tinfoil hats, but my friend Weird Al made a fun song about it, so I thought it might put us in the mood. Hit it, Alex.
I figured out the shadow organizations and the Illuminati know that they're finally primed for world domination. And soon you've got black helicopters coming across the border, puppet masters for the new world order. There's always someone that's watching you, and still the government won't admit they face a whole moon landing. Thought control race, psychotronic scanning, don't mind that. I'm protected cause I made this hat from aluminum foil.
Foil.
Where I had this foil lined, in case an alien's inclined to probe your butt or read your mind. Looks a bit peculiar.
Peculiar.
Seems a little crazy. Someday
I'll prove
there's a big conspiracy.
Oh my gosh.
You know what? If you're gonna, you know, the thing is, all our conspiracies, we've had to get new ones because they all came true.
That was brilliant.
I don't know what the song really is in real life, but Weird Al is a, I don't know. My stepson used to love him, and I thought the kid was an idiot. Now I'm like, oh, he might have just been a genius, actually, after all.
Yeah, his Amish Paradise one is probably his best, though.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, you're right. I do like that one a lot, a really lot. So you said that this kind of sounds like a conspiracy, but I'm sure it's totally true. So lay out for us what the whole goal is to jury rig everything for 2026.
Okay, so let's step back here for a second, and I'm going to ask you a very difficult question here.
Okay.
How many Republican congressmen are there, and how many Democrat congressmen are there?
In the state of California?
No, nationwide.
Nationwide, what are we, 18-ish Republican, 16-ish? I don't know. What are we these days? Got rid of Mac.
Yeah, Gates.
Did we hire someone new?
We're within two or three right now. I think it's 219, 216. I think we got a three-vote margin or something like that.
Yeah, it's skinny.
It depends on what happens. But for all intents and purposes, we are at 50-50, right?
Yeah.
Which means there's a lot of national attention of who picks up a couple seats and who doesn't.
Correct.
Now, you remember, you've heard a lot of stories about how the census really messed up and it, you know, resulted in blue states getting six more congressmen than they should have had, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So when the next census happens, there's already going to be like a plus six in favor of Republicans. So the 219 would be like 225, and the 215 or 16 is now 210. All of a sudden, if you didn't have it, there'd be a little bit, Speaker Johnson would have a little bit of breathing room, right?
Yeah.
And then the people are actually studying the trends of what's going to happen for the next census, and based upon COVID and the mass exodus from the state of California and from New York and some exodus from Massachusetts and from Illinois, people fleeing these poor blue state decision-making processes, they are predicting that there will be an additional 6 to 12 seat swing in addition to the mistakes made in 2020 that will be affected by the 2030 census. So all of a sudden, Republicans doing nothing, there is a possibility that 2030 census is going to be a net swing of 30, could be, you know, 20 to 30 seats for Republicans. And that's huge, right? You know, that's a whole lot of breathing room right there. But then in addition to that, there is a case before the United States Supreme Court, which is called Palais versus the state of Louisiana. And in that case, one of the issues that the Supreme Court is looking at is, do we end affirmative action in politics? Because we have these things called the Voting Rights Act, and it's basically this complex mathematical formula where they make a determination that there are enough minorities living in an area that we have to draw the congressional district in such a way that we ensure that the minority candidate is going to get elected. Now, what happens is, you know, here in California, down in the Central Valley, they decided that they needed three voting rights districts in the Central Valley. The Central Valley really only has five congressional districts. So what that meant is that the two non-voting rights districts look absolutely hideous as you kind of squeeze all the white voters into the other districts. So, you know, it creates a lot of bad-looking districts when you start drawing lines just based upon we want to get these Asian voters here and these Asian voters here and these Asian voters over here and try to put them all together to create an Asian district. Well, we're going to take all these Latinos over here and, oh, we got to cut out these white neighborhoods here. And the Supreme Court, you know, we don't know what the Supreme Court is going to do. But in listening to the questions of the judges and analyzing the question, there are many people who believe that the Supreme Court very likely will end this program of states having to draw districts in order to ensure that minorities are able to get elected. And one of the things that was before the Supreme Court is that right now, 75% of all African American congressmen do not come from a district that was created to ensure that African Americans can get elected, which means there is really not a need in our country. We are not living in the 1860s. We're not living in the 1960s anymore. You know, people of color are able to get elected in Congress in the United States. We don't need to create these special districts just to ensure that we have minority representation in Congress. And so this is not conservative. This is some of the most liberal minority rights activist groups. They have said that there is likely 19 voting rights district seats that are all held by Democrats, that if this happens, will go away, and it's another 38 vote swing. So we've already talked about how the natural progression of the country is 20 to 30 votes. If you add, you know, another 19, which is another 38, are you starting to get the magnitude of what's going on right now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Now let's take the third element. The third element, which is what I tease, is 3 years before the census.
Right.
The Secretary of Commerce is supposed to send to Congress the topic of what he wants to put on the census.
Wait, say that your phone was kind of cutting out a little bit.
Three years before the census.
Yeah.
And the census is April 1st, 2030. Okay, so 3 years before that is going to be April 1st, 2027. So 3 years before that, the census, the Secretary of Commerce must send to Congress the list of questions that he wants to put on the census.
Oh, the list of questions.
Right.
Okay.
Not the questions, the topics. I'm sorry, the topics.
Okay.
2 years.
They don't just use the same ones all the time?
No.
Oh.
2 years before the census, he has to send to Congress the list of the questions that he wants to put on. So that is April 1st, 2027, there is a report given to Congress on the topics that he's going to cover, and April 1st, 2028, he's going to send to Congress the questions he wants to have on the census. Okay? Who is in Congress on April 1st, 2027 and April 1st, 2028? Someone who is elected in 2026.
Oh, okay, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Congress that is elected in a year ending in six is the census Congress. They are the ones that are going to be reviewing and have the opportunity to, you know, make all sorts of procedural nightmares for budgetary purposes, or they're the ones. They are the census Congress. Now, you and I both know that Donald Trump wants a census question, or wants a citizenship question on the census, right?
Right.
They are saying, many experts out there have said, that if the citizenship question ends up on the census, and Congress then does something about representation based upon that. But even if it's on it, it's going to affect Congress another 3 to 5. But even if it's not on it, it could, or if it is on it and Congress does representation based upon it, it could be another 20 seats, type thing. So when you take the natural changing of the country, you take the end of affirmative action for Congress, and you add in that there is a potential that the census will have a citizenship question and that representation will be based upon citizenship.
Oh.
If that happens, those three things together, the Democrat Party is going to be like the Democrat Party of 1866. They are going to be a regional party with no national appeal, no ability to elect anybody. They're basically going to be a party of coastal elite, and they will not be able to control Congress or the White House for 30 to 40 years.
Ouch.
So, by winning in 2026, by putting all hands on deck, winning in 2026, what they hope to do is stop the citizenship question and also probably try, you know, by stopping the citizenship question, then trying to get their candidate in on 2028, mess up the census again, you know, like Biden was able to mess up the census and the results thereby. You know, by messing up the census, ensure that, okay, yes, maybe we have lost a little bit. Maybe there's going to be some migration that we lose. But they hope for at least another decade to hold off this inevitable tide where this radical, crazy agenda of the Democrat Party, which has completely left the mainstream American. I mean, mainstream America does not want men in women's locker rooms. They don't. The stuff that's being pushed right now by the Democrat Party and the special interests of the Democrat Party is not in line with mainstream America. And there is this mass exodus going on. And yes, it's even going on here in California. In the last 2 years, voting registration, the Republican Party has gained over 550,000 registrations over the Democrat Party. We have closed the gap over 500,000 voters in just the last 2 years. They can't keep this pace up for much longer, even in California. So this, what I see the special election of Prop 50 all about, it is a last-ditch effort to take advantage of Trump derangement syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
To try to get their voters to give the Democrats and to give special interest, the special power for this one election that they intend to use to try to mess with the will of the voters. Because even Democrat voters, the rank and file Democrat voters do not think that that all this illegal immigrants makes any sense. They don't want them taking their jobs. They don't want their housing to be more expensive. They don't want food costs to be more expensive. They don't want transportation costs to be more expensive. They understand that this, the policy of Joe Biden just running this country with illegal immigrants was not good for the country, was not good for their bottom line. And so what the rank-and-file Democrat understands is these policies don't work. But they may not like Donald Trump. And so what Gavin Newsom has done is he has taken Trump derangement syndrome, and he is using it to manipulate his voters into doing something that is against their best interest and is against their stated policy. They have made it abundantly clear, Democrat voters have made it abundantly clear that they want this commission. But in the name of this, you know, take socking it to Donald Trump, they are going to be willing to destroy the thing that they love so much, the thing that they believe is good government, just to take it to Donald Trump. And so, you know, Gavin Newsom is a very despicable person. We have plenty of good names, nicknames that he has rightfully earned. But what we have to understand is that this radical left, this socialist communist agenda of the special interest, left-leaning special interest, they read what is happening, and they want to hold on to their power as long as they can. And in order to do that, they need to make sure that they have a chance of holding Congress in 2026. And then, you know, if they could hold Congress in 2026, that gives them the ability to maybe win the presidency in 2028. And if they could do that, then maybe they can hold off the inevitable for maybe another 10, 20 years. But if we defeat them with defeating Prop 50, if we get in there and ensure that the Republicans win Congress in 2026 so that we get the citizenship question on there, and then we make sure that representation is based upon citizenship, we have the ability to ensure that, okay, maybe we don't get rid of this cuckoo left in San Francisco and, you know, downtown L.A.
Right, but we didn't give them the keys to the city.
Like, yeah.
All the cities, actually. Oh, my gosh. Well, okay.
I don't think your general voting block is aware of that at all.
No. So I would always encourage people to send the archive to people. But honestly, I was just texting a lady who really is plugged into election integrity in another area of the country, and I'm like, you know, when I post the archive later today, you got to listen to the first part of the second hour if you listen to nothing else. Okay. So we have to take a quick break to go crush up our tinfoil hats and, you know, since we got to
get back to reality.
Yeah, well, we got to find a new conspiracy theory because obviously that one's going to, you know, that one is, that one screams true to me, actually.
Yeah.
Very cool. Not cool, but very cool you told everyone. We're going to take a fast break. Come back with our guest, Mark Moisher. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. So the people who were writing the maps and putting Prop 50 on the ballot, I think that's what they were listening to, actually. I think we need to just really, really stop this in its tracks.
Yeah.
How likely is it, Mark, that if this were to pass, how likely is it that this starts kind of a grass fire across the country, either for or against, in this type of, you know, this type of, I guess, ballot box warfare, with the gerrymandering of districts? Does this set off a wave of it, or?
Well, here's, redistricting nuclear options is really what Gavin Newsom is trying to do right now. And it's up to the voters of California to really say, we don't want to be governed by a madman. I remember as a child doing nuclear drills that if a nuclear bomb went off, we were supposed to duck under our desk.
Our tiny desks.
Yeah. I'm sorry. But it took a Ronald Reagan and a Gorbachev to put their, you know, there were plenty of war hawks in Reagan's administration who did not like what he was doing with Gorbachev. And there were plenty of generals in Russia who hated what Gorbachev was doing. But the two of them decided that, you know what, we're going to put the people above the politics. And what is going on right now is Gavin Newsom is blaming Texas and saying, Texas had to Texas is doing this redistrict, and so what we are doing is a response to Texas. Now, I find it very interesting because Ohio also is doing a redistricting this year, and it's most likely going to pick up two Republican seats. But Ohio is doing it because a court ordered them to do it. This happens all the time, that courts order states to redraw.
Well, isn't that what happened in Texas?
It is. They were under threat of litigation. What ended up happening in Texas is that there was a county that was sued by Joe Biden. And the county was sued because they did not consider race enough in gerrymandering their district. They didn't create a special affirmative action district for the Hispanics and Blacks. They didn't take what's called a coalition district. They didn't draw a specialty racial gerrymandered district that ensured that the minorities of Hispanics and Blacks together could vote to ensure that a minority candidate had representation in the Galveston County Commissioner's race. That case went all the way up to the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit said, no, that is unconstitutional, Joe Biden. There is no requirement in the United States Constitution that you create districts on a racial basis where you take this minority group and that minority group, and together you call them a special voting rights district. That is unconstitutional. As a result of that decision, the Texas legislature, which had back in 2021 drawn four of those districts for Congress, that Fifth Circuit decision basically meant that those four congressional seats were unconstitutional. And Harmeet Dillon, the head of the Civil Rights Department at the DOJ, sent Greg Abbott a letter and said, what are you going to do about this? We could do this the hard way or we could do this the easy way. I could sue you and we were going to get a court order and the courts are going to say you have to redraw the line, or you just redraw the line. So while Texas was not directly under order of the court, everybody who is anybody in the redistricting world knew that Texas needed to redraw their lines to take care of these unconstitutional districts. So in a way, Texas had unconstitutional districts that they followed the law in order to make sure that they were constitutional. California is under no threat of litigation. There has been no lawsuit. There is no judicial order. And so what California wants to do is they want to make their district partisan, something that the commission is not allowed to do. Our redistricting commission is not allowed to consider politics in drawing lines. They want to consider politics. And so what special interest wants to do, special interest wants to create this third reason why in California we will do a mid-decade redistricting. Most people don't know that there are two ways that we do mid-decade decade in California. One is if after the commission draws a line, we the people go out and get enough signatures, we get a referendum, and we, at the next election, we vote on it, that would force the commission to go back and redraw the line. The second way is you sue, and if a court orders it, then the commission goes back and draws the line. But in both of those scenarios, the commission is redrawing the lines, and they must redraw the lines without considering politics. Now, what special interest in D.C. wants to do is they want to be able to draw the line in such a way to ensure that the politicians are not accountable to the voters. Because when politicians are not accountable to the voters because they have such a safe seat, rather than go home to the district and campaign and educate the voters on why they did what they did, they go on foreign junkets on the lobbyist dime, and they are able to, you know, they're not accountable to voters. They're accountable to special interests. And so the lines drawn by the commission had like about 10 competitive races. Well, the lines drawn by the politicians and special interests have maybe one competitive district. So what is going on, and this is why it's not going to be temporary, because if special interest realizes that all they need to do is throw $100 million and they can now change nonpartisan commission lines into partisan lines, they are now creating a third exception in the California Constitution in how you can get a mid-decade redistricting. And what that will mean is in 2030, if the party in power does not like what is going on, then with the commission map, well, then they'll just go get special interest to donate $100 million and we'll be doing this all over again, another Prop 50. And so that is why it is so important that the voters of California tell Gavin Newsom and the Democrats in control, we don't want a madman at the helm creating a nuclear war with the Republican Party. Because if California goes down this path and votes yes, and I'm not able to put a hold on it through the courts, and I'm very optimistic about the lawsuit that I'm going to be bringing, but if courts don't always work as fast as I want them to, so if I'm not able to put a hold on it, you vote yes, I don't get a hold on it. What is going to happen if Florida will redistrict? You know, other states are going to redistrict, and it's all going to happen in January of this year. And we're basically going to be going and doing this nuclear option where politics is going to be so predominant in the redistricting process. It's not that it's not already bad. I mean, take a look at Illinois, and take a look at Massachusetts, and take a look at, you know, all the New England states where I heard something like, it's like 25 congressmen, they're all Democrats, even though when you look at that whole entire region, Republicans are 40%. You know, Democrats have been masters for decades at using politics to try to maximize their representation. Okay? What is going on right now is that, you know, President Trump has shown a flashlight on the rats of the, you know, the political gerrymandering that goes on. And he says, you know what, we're not going to let you get away with this. And so, you know, Texas had to do what Texas had to do. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They were going to get sued.
And for the people who will say, like, well, you know, the Republicans are running everything in like, if they say that in California, I mean, that's ludicrous.
That's
we have a supermajority in the state legislature. Out of 52 members of Congress in the state of California, we have 9. There are 9 Republicans out of 52 currently. And after this, there will likely only be four.
Yeah.
So how do you explain that?
Republicans control 40% of the vote in California.
Yeah, with four members of
75% of the assembly and the senators.
So that just shows you that the Republicans aren't voting.
Well, it shows you that they can't. The seats are in a lot of cases, the seats are unwinnable.
Well, that's true.
It isn't. Well, let's face it. We got Katie Porter running, who might be like the gift that keeps on giving to the Republican Party for mostly ever. Could you imagine being on her staff? Wow. But I think that the level of gerrymandering has allowed candidates like Katie Porter to even bubble to the surface. Could you imagine back in the day? How could she have even gotten on the ticket?
Well, without
the giant pause where everybody just like scratches their head.
Without universal mail-in balloting and ballot harvesting and hundreds of billions of dollars, she never would have beat Rohrabacher.
No. That made no sense. Never made any sense.
Mark, if let's assume that the 50 passes and you file your lawsuit, will it be heard in court? How long would that take in order to stop it from actually going
into... How about this? Let's take a really quick break because we do want to unravel that because there are some timing issues with the filing of the congressional seats and all that stuff. Can we do that when we come back, Mark?
Let's do it on our final segment.
Okay. We're going to go away with a couple of... go away and come back with a couple of songs like, you know... The fight back songs, right?
Yeah. Right?
We're in the fight back mode.
Fight, fight, fight.
Fight, fight, fight. All right. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. What Gavin should hear on November 4th.
There you go.
That should be playing like a little soundtrack at his little celebration party. All right, Mark.
Let's talk about litigation.
Yes, let's talk about that.
So, first off, I have a nice little thing. Freedom is not free, and justice is not quick. And... So,
you're a real buzzkill. Shoot, I don't have a song about that. Where's Weird Al when I need him?
So we're going to start off with kind of some deadlines. The first deadline is December 19th. That is the date that people can pull, basically pull papers in order to get signatures in lieu of a filing fee. Now, candidates will not actually pull papers until February. What these two dates are kind of the soft opening of the congressional season and the hard opening of the congressional season. So the February deadline, or the February date is really the true start of the congressional season. But there's kind of this warm-up period that's December 19th. The Supreme Court has come up with a decision that's called the Purcell Principle. And it's kind of, to put it in layman's term, once a race has started, courts are not supposed to stop the race or change the rules of the race. And so when that comes to redistricting, is the redistricting maps that are in place as of, and I don't know which date the court's going to say, is it the soft opening of December 19th or the hard opening in early February, but when we hit that date, at that point in time, courts are no longer allowed to, they can make decisions, but they can't have an effect on that election. So if the voters vote yes on Prop 50, the Prop 50 maps are kind of what the rule is. What we are going to be doing is we're going to be going in and we're going to ask the court to make what's called a preliminary injunction. It means before you hear all the evidence, before we put on days and days and days of experts, where we cross-examine the experts and we get all their testimony, before we even get there, we're going to do what's a preliminary showing. We're going to put together some of our best evidence and our best law and just say, based upon the law, based upon this evidence right now, we are making a preliminary showing that we are likely to prevail. And because we are likely to prevail, we want you to keep the status quo. Don't let the new maps go into effect. Let's keep the old maps in place so that, you know, people are not jeopardized of their rights for something that the court, we believe that you're later going to find that these new maps are unconstitutional. So let's just keep the status quo. That is what we're going to try to get a three-judge panel to make a decision on by about Thanksgiving. So they'll have about 3 weeks. And it's not uncommon for a court to take a week or two to make a decision. You know, some of these Biden judges have been making preliminary injunctions within 2 hours of the liberal group filing their motion. So when the judge wants to move fast, they can make these injunction decisions fairly quickly. Once they make that decision, whether they go for us or go against us, the loser is going to go file with the Supreme Court. These congressional races are not your typical federal court. You don't start with a, you know, single district judge. You actually start off with a three-judge panel, and that decision is appealable straight to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will not do a lot of briefing. It's going to be what's on their rocket docket is just going to be briefing on the paper, and it generally takes about 10 to 14 days for the Supreme Court to process a injunction pending appeal or a stay pending appeal, and we have seen this happen, you know, just back in 2022. They did this in the Alabama case where a judge heard evidence and said, hey, something is unconstitutional, but, you know, the Supreme Court had to come in and say, no, you're going to keep the old map while you fully litigate this entire matter. And so we believe that based upon past precedents of the Supreme Court, the makeup of the Supreme Court, and the oral arguments that they heard in Calais, that there is a good possibility that the Supreme Court would enter a stay and not allow the new map to take effect as long as I properly have presented the evidence of why these new maps are unconstitutional.
But the initial filing, that is that heard by the Ninth Circuit?
No, it's actually going to be filed in a federal district court.
Okay.
And so you're going to have a single federal district judge.
Okay.
They then make a referral to the head of the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit will then appoint one judge out of the Ninth Circuit, and then we'll pick another district judge in the circuit. So it could be another judge in California. It could be a judge in Idaho. It could be a judge in Montana. It could be a judge in Washington or, you know, anywhere in the Ninth Circuit. It could be any district judge. And so it creates a special three-judge panel. That three-judge panel will rule on the injunction, and they'll basically have the entire case also. But and that decision, that three-judge panel, that special three-judge panel decision is appealable straight to the Supreme Court.
Okay. Okay. So it's not done if they vote against it initially.
Yeah. Our job is to try to get them to make a decision by Thanksgiving and then appeal to the Supreme Court so that they could have the ability to make the decision by what I call the soft opening of the congressional election on December 19th. And, you know, if the three-judge panel does make a decision by Thanksgiving, then I have no doubt that the Supreme Court could enter a decision by the 19th. The only question becomes if the three-judge panel decides that they want to wait until the middle of December to make it, you know, how, you know, there'll be some, a lot of work that I'll be doing to try to keep the fire on, to keep the thing moving.
Mm-hmm.
So. Wow. But, okay, as far as, you know, I mean, I think the danger in a way is that people are thinking, well, this can't be constitutional. I'm sure that, you know, lawsuits will save us.
Yeah, so we don't need to vote.
Yeah, right, back to that.
Back to that again.
Everything ends with, oh dear, please don't, you know, sit it out,
let's
right?
Let's avoid all that and vote it no. And now let's go the other way. If it doesn't pass, is that going to be litigated?
If it doesn't pass?
Yes.
I couldn't imagine a lawsuit that could be brought that, you know, if it doesn't pass.
Right.
I think it's just over.
It's done. Right. So it's
just, and I'll move on to my next project. And then believe you me, there's enough stuff in the election integrity world that I can do.
Can only imagine.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
So if we weren't all doing this, and actually looking at our time, we're in the 6-minute mark. The idea that people get special consideration based on their ethnicity for jobs, for loans, for voting, for all these different things. At the end of the day, that all just, you know, for a group of people that are so myopically focused on racism, I was raised that is racism.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, singling people out because of their color is racism. So how do you think this as a, you know, as a voting strategy, you know, this whole Voting Rights Act, maybe we can put a finer point on that a little bit. You think that'll go away and we'll all just get to be Americans?
I mean, the purpose of the 14th, 15th Amendment was that our politicians are supposed to be colorblind in making the law. That is the purpose. Now, unfortunately, there are some people out there whose racism is so ingrained in their DNA that they can't help but being racist. And as a result of, you know, them constantly trying to get around the 14th and 15th Amendment, they were, you know, suppressing the ability of minority groups to be heard. That's a ugly part of our history, okay? It doesn't mean that you did it, doesn't mean that I did it, but there were individuals who were elected, who were in those positions, who were suppressing the voice of the minority group. But that is in the past, and we can't keep living in the past. America has, I don't want to say completely solved the problem, but the problem of the 1860s and the 1960s is not the problem of 2025. And we cannot create, can't continue to, because the longer we are focusing in as race, as a predominant factor, in determining who gets to represent who, that as long as we are doing that, A, we're not living in a colorblind society, thus we're violating the 14th and 15th Amendment, but we are also continuing the narrative and continuing the discussion.
Exactly.
When we need, you know, I actually think that California should be a model to the world in how we, you know, look at our politicians statewide. We have a white guy. We have a white woman. We have a black woman. We have an Hispanic man. We have an Asian man. We have an Asian woman. We have another white guy. We have another black guy. We, you know, we have our statewide leaders are a true rainbow. You know, it's more political than it is color. Californians are looking past color. We don't need to continue the narrative of racial gerrymandering in order to ensure that minorities' voices are heard. No. When we don't do it, you know, when we don't make political decisions with race as a predominant factor, racial minorities are thriving right now in America, especially in California.
Yeah, so let's just go back to dividing it the correct way, which is by population, by not political, not racial.
Well, it makes a lot more sense to have it be in farming districts, rural districts, those kinds of things. It's very hard, especially at the federal level, to keep up with everything that's affecting everybody at all times, in all places. You can only be on two committees, three if you get special permission, but you're not on every single committee. So if you have a predominantly rural district, you better have somebody who knows rural land issues, has some experience in that field,
right,
and can focus their efforts on that. But if you stick them with, you know, also huge cities and a bunch of other stuff, it's just, your representation is diluted just based
right
on the number
you're
of hours.
You're going to be experts in housing and transportation.
Number of hours in a day. But, your urban guys, they should be smart at all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they should
and
be.
They won't be. I mean, especially in our district, I mean, they have no knowledge of the workings of, Northern California, not San Francisco, which I think they consider Northern California, but Northern California. There's a whole different set of issues up here.
Had a conversation with somebody from one of our federal senators' office, Adam Schiff, Monday for an hour and 15 minutes, and helped them understand the issues on wolves and cartel marijuana grows. Just did those two things for well over an hour.
Neither of which are even an issue in the southern part or central part of the state.
But here's somebody who's representing our whole state who really, smart. Had the foresight to say, hey, we don't know about this. Can you guys smarten us up? But we are smart about that up here and did clue them in. So we're rolling into the garage, Mark. We have to run away again. Imagine that. But I did pick out the perfect song that I want Gavin Newsom to hear on the 4th. I've spent 2 hours thinking about it, and I found it. Mark Moisher, this one's for you.
Thanks for being on, Mark.
We the People Radio.
Thanks for having me.
.us.
But the party was nice, the party was bumping.
Hey,
D-I-O.
And everybody having a ball.
D-I-O.
Until the fellas start the name calling.
D-I-O.
And the girls respond to the call. I have a full shout out.